Charles gave us last Thursday off to use that as an opportunity to take a quick and short break vacation. We went to Newport, Rhode Island, and whenever I go someplace, I always look at it from the standpoint of what is it we do here and how we're doing it, and I read the newspaper and I try to get as much official information. That's because, in fact, I'm trying to figure out a way to write it off for us. But in any event, in talking and looking at some of the circumstances up there, it was amazing that they have similar problems that we have, in spite of the fact that they're less than 60,000 people. And their biggest obstacle and challenge is affordable housing. And they are essentially, literally, two communities from that standpoint. There is the public housing that people don't know about that's in Newport and is hidden, so to speak, but I now know where it is, and then there's the rest of the people in Newport. And talking to some of the shopkeepers and store and people who work in the stores, I said, well, where do you live? And it turns out that they commute. And I was really surprised at the fact that very few, if any, people who work in Newport actually live in Newport unless they actually own the particular establishments that they're in. And the second major issue for them, believe it or not, is transportation in terms of trying to control the traffic and getting around the streets, et cetera. And the streets are always in all kinds of disrepair because of the snow, freezing, defrosting, et cetera. So that was a worthwhile experiment for me, an opportunity to represent the planning board in Newport during the boat show.
Why didn't you invite me?
Because there's only room for one commissioner.
No, it's okay. Well, I have a report. I attended on Tuesday the opening of the regional office for the Maryland Economic Development Office, and that will be, the region is Frederick County, Prince George's County, and our county. And it's a new office located at Courthouse Square, and it has all this high-tech pictures of Maryland and what's going on. The governor cut the ribbon for the opening, and there were remarks by the mayor of Rockville and a number of luminaries. And so that's going to be a useful thing. David Edgerly also spoke, as did the two representatives from the other counties. And David seemed excited about the potential for probably getting money from the state, but that's not the way he put it. Last thing I would mention, and I don't usually plug events or mention events, but you all may know that on October 1st, we will have the dedication of the Reflection Terrace, which is a tribute to the people who were lost in the sniper killings last year. And I think our illustrious chair will be there to make remarks, as will our county executive. But I have already seen the site, and it's almost completed. It really is quite lovely and calls for a moment of reflection, and I hope people will attend that event.
Thank you for mentioning that. John?
Last Saturday, I had the pleasure for a while of going down and seeing the reopening and rededication of Meadowbrook Stables, a very nice event. The place looks literally like a million or several million dollars of Mr. Bradley's money. But it's an example of how private-public partnerships can work, particularly if we make them work. It was a very nice affair, and it's good to
Thank
see
you.
The stables back in operation.
Glad you were able to go to that. And the list of accomplishments is never-ending. It's amazing what piles up over 2 weeks. It shows how hard we're working in so many areas, but I have a few other items to mention. We inaugurated a soil botanical art at McCrillis Gardens,
very nice,
which is a lovely new initiative that I think also appeals to a portion of our constituency that's new, which is very exciting to see Park and Planning reaching out to a new group. And these are budding artists who want to draw flowers and plants, and there was some terrific art on display. We also last night had a major fundraiser for the Trolley Museum, which has several new cars and is trying to acquire some additional cars, in part, of course, to replace the tragic loss from the fire. But the Trolley Museum is open for business and looks as great as it ever did. And had a lot of support turnout, so that was good. And on Monday morning, the staff briefed the Fed Committee on our partnership with Fannie Mae and on the potential for extending that partnership to other employers in the private and public sector. It was a very well-received report. The council members were very impressed with what we had done and with what Fannie Mae is doing with us. And I want to, again, compliment the many staff who have been working on that. And finally, we had a public hearing on the Greenlee Master Plan, which was received with mixed results. But we expected that.
I just wanted to add on the Brookside, the School of Botanical Illustration, there was a wonderful event for it. And we learned, among other things, there are not very many of these programs in the country. Apparently, there are students literally coming in from around the country to take classes. So it did occur to me that we ought to make sure that the economic development people know we have something this unique.
That's a good point.
Apparently there are people literally coming and probably staying in hotels to while they're here. So.
Well, I did say to Mr. Edgerly at the meeting that we should begin getting more, and I think you probably, Derek, have spoken to him, that we should be meeting as a commission with the Office of Economic Development to get ourselves on the same page and share information. And he said, yes, he wanted to do that.
Well, I hope you've all seen the ad, the full-page ad they're putting in lots of magazines around the county to around the country to acquire new business. And the ad has a beautiful set of pictures of Montgomery County, and it says the place to go for biospace, aerospace, cyberspace, and green space. So they're using us to market them, to market their economic development efforts.
Good.
That's wonderful. I thought you were first making reference to the ad with the governor painting and taking on the chores.
That's a different ad campaign.
That's a budgetary saving thing.
Any director's report?
Just a reminder that items 3, 4, and 5, which were actually the same project, the applicant has requested a deferral. That is not on the agenda.
Silver Spring Gateway.
And secondly, with some more good news from our historic preservation unit, I'd like Susan Soderberg to take just a couple minutes to advise you of some other events, or actually not events, but awards, I guess.
I'm Susan Soderberg, Education and Outreach Planner for Historic Preservation, and I left you all some information on your desk there about this really a very nice coup that we have achieved. We have gotten a site in Montgomery County Parks and a program accepted into the National Network to Freedom. And I would like to also introduce my cohort on the program, which is the Underground Railroad Hike on the Rural Legacy Trail, Lynn Coleman, who is with Natural Resources, the trail planning supervisor. And she and Jean Elliott were much help on the planning of the Underground Railroad Trail experience on the Rural Legacy, which is part of the Rachel Carson Greenway. If you open up this brochure, which tells you about the National Network to Freedom, you will see on the inside there is a list of benefits of being accepted into this program, and the benefits does include getting funding, grants from outside resources. And up in the corner here, you will see a little star. That is the emblem, which will go on our sign about William Chaplin in the Jessup Blair Park, and will also be on our literature. And we will be part of the website that they have. This is the dedication ceremony that we had November 3rd, Maryland Emancipation Day 2001, for the Rural Legacy Trail, with the pictures of all the people involved in that event. And this is today's rendition of the trail itself, which goes from Woodlawn Manor to Sandy Spring. And you can see the white mark here is the Sandy Spring. This trail was not actually involved in the Underground Railroad that we have any documentation for, but we do know that there were people in Sandy Spring who were helping people escape to freedom. And we will be dedicating the new kiosk and the signage for this trail on this Emancipation Day, and I've included a flyer for that. The speaker for that dedication will be Alan Spears from the National Parks Conservation Association. And we would really appreciate it if any of you would like to come to that event as well and welcome people from the park and planning. This is one of the signs that will be along the trail, so you can see what the signs are like. We have to special order these because, as you know, the trail park signs are usually white on a brown background, and that just wouldn't do for this sign, as you can see. I've also included for the site, which is in Jessup Blair Park, we have a sign that is being designed in our sign exhibit shop, and we have I've included the description of the event, the detailed description with footnotes that I had to research to apply for this acceptance into the National Network to Freedom. Does anyone have any questions?
Not really, but I attended the event last year, and I found it very inspiring. I really learned a lot, and I learned about the signs that people put up in their windows to know that it was a safe home. And I'm going to try to go on Saturday, November 6th. I have a family event, but I want to go back, and I just encourage everybody to see it for themselves because it was really terrific.
Thank you. And as you can see, we actually have two events going on that day, the trail hike at 10 o'clock and then the ceremony at Oakley Cabin from 2 to 3.
Great. Yeah, they're great. I went the year before last, and they're both terrific events. So thank you for doing that, and congratulations on the accreditation, another form of accreditation for us.
Is that mentioned in the biannual?
I don't think it is. Maybe we should add it in.
Formally found out a little over a week ago, so
it's pretty
put
cool.
That in.
Yep. So it seems to me
we should definitely highlight that. Absolutely. Put that in there. Very relevant to some of the discussions the council is having about legacy and the Ag Reserve as well. All right. We have one request for reconsideration involving a project known as Kingsview Village. We have a memorandum from Mr. Elbaba. Do you want to say anything briefly to...
For the record, with legal staff, there is a reconsideration request before you today. It was provided in your packet concerning action taken on November the 13th of 2003, disapproving a site plan amendment applications submitted by Pleasants Investment Limited Partnership. Reconsideration request was filed in November of 2003, and we can do this a couple of ways. I can, if the board feels that the memorandum sufficiently describes the background, I can forego that discussion in respect
just,
to the...
Just remind us which commissioners are eligible to make a motion for reconsideration and give us your staff recommendation on what we ought to do.
The commissioners present for the vote in November were Commissioners Perdue, Commissioner Wellington, and Commissioner Robinson. Either one of those three commissioners may make a motion in a reconsideration request as the board may recall, there is no testimony by either the applicant or any other parties, but the board may solicit information from either staff, environmental staff and development review staff is present. Pleasance, the applicant, is present, as is a representative from Elm Street Development. And, of course, legal staff can provide information. If a motion for reconsideration is made, any one of the present commissioners may vote. And staff's recommendation in this case is to grant this reconsideration request. For the board has two options in staff's view for granting this reconsideration request. The first ground would be based on the environmental issues. At the public hearing on this item, the board had concerns regarding the adequacy of the record on specifically concerning two environmental conditions. The board was uncomfortable taking a decision because of the gap in information. That information has been provided to staff subsequent to the public hearing, and in our view, the with that information, staff will no longer need to have those conditions and instead will require this applicant to submit a revised forest conservation plan reflecting any required mitigation measures before the public hearing. Secondly, and the ground for reconsideration at the board's discretion would be that this would be a compelling reason, as the rules of procedure provide. The second ground relates to the question of the roadway construction participation, an issue raised by Elm Street at the last hearing and in writing shortly before the hearing. The in its request, Pleasance indicated that it did not have sufficient time to present certain historical documents relevant that it thought the board would need to consider. In our view, the request for reconsideration clearly outlines that the board was not timely provided certain pertinent information. And secondly, the request itself stated clearly a reason for that information not being available, the reason being the being noticed of the requested condition at the last hour. And staff believes that the second ground available for reconsideration would be satisfied by the request.
Okay, and we have your memo before us. If a motion to reconsider is made and it carries, then the previous decision is vacated and we will set the matter down for future discussion. If no motion is made or if the motion doesn't carry, then the previous board action remains unaffected.
That's correct.
No. Any discussion? Any questions or discussion?
One question of clarification. So does that mean that if it's passed, I was under the impression that the discussion when the case comes back before us will be limited in the scope. Are you saying that the scope is not limited?
No, the scope would not be limited.
Got you. Okay.
It's as if you start all over again.
Say de novo.
De novo. Yeah. Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll move to reconsideration of the previous opinion.
Second.
On both grounds.
Mr. Robinson moves reconsideration on both grounds stated by counsel, with the second by Commissioner Wellington. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? A motion carries unanimously, and the matter will be set down for a new decision at a future date.
Thank you.
Number one on the agenda, abandonment of a portion of unimproved Norland Lane.
Good
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Shahriar Etemali in Transportation Planning. The case before you is an abandonment case, a petition number AB662. And the petitioners have requested to abandon portion of Moreland Lane between York Lane and Harwood Drive in Bethesda. Staff recommends supporting this request with three conditions. One is to provide a 15-foot right-of-way within the existing right-of-way that we have for easement for WSSC water line and sidewalk. And excuse me. Petitioner also filed a new subdivision plan to record a new subdivision boundary. And the third condition is to construct the 15, I mean, the construction of the pathway within the 15-foot right-of-way. We have evaluated this application for its transportation and environmental impact, and we would like the Planning Board to support this petition.
And there is no testimony. Any discussion?
I think the staff report's very clear, Mr. Chairman. I would move approval of this recommendation.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Number two, Town of Laytonville annexation of the Rolling Ridge property.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Maria Martin, Community-Based Planning. Before you is the Town of Laytonville Annexation Petition X01-05, 27.36 acres for the Jones Farm on 7215 Brink Road. The present request is for a classification from the town's rural density transfer zone to the town's R3 zone, which is residential 2-acre properties. This is the first annexation we've been able to find that's involved a historic site, so this has been kind of a controversial item for staff. The applicant is presently pursuing a request to change the reclassification to the town's agricultural zone, which will alleviate some of the questions staff had about increasing the density on this property, going from 25 acres to possibly 2-acre residential sites. At the time the staff report was due, we weren't sure of which requests would go forward. It was being discussed within the town how to actually change the petition requests and also whether zoning ordinance amendments would be made to allow this type of development within the town. So there are two reasons for this annexation petition. The first one, because there is new houses being proposed on the property in that area within the town's limits, but the town requires that the septic fields be all within the same jurisdiction and within the same class zoning classification. This would bring additional acreage into the town so they could have the septic fields. The second reason is the right-of-way along the northwest leg of the town's bypass would be extended so that they could build it and avoid historic sites within the town and would put it to the west of the present master plan historic site. I'll let the rest of the staff report stand as is. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
I do have
Thank
a question.
You very much.
I do have a question. Is the town of Laytonville here? Yeah.
Yep, and they're the next one to speak.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mayor Owen, welcome. And you're here with your distinguished town council, the council to the town, distinguished town council. And
it's a tongue twister, Mr. Chairman.
We are ready to hear your views on this annexation.
Let me just introduce who's at the table here. Okay. So that this is Mayor Owen from the town of Laytonville, and we have Jody Klein representing the
Elm Street Development and a representative from the Elm Street Development Corporation also. We want to preliminarily thank your staff, particularly Maria and Judy Daniel, John Carter, and also thank the chairman for meeting with us and giving us some guidance as to how to do this in the least painful method. And I think we've taken that guidance, and it's been incorporated into the staff's presentation. Yes, we do have will shortly have a request to amend the annexation so that the rezoning formally requested for R3 will no longer be in existence. It will be an agricultural zone in the town, which is very comparable to what is in the county. So we do not have any conflict in terms of the state law requirement with the county's master plan any longer. The other issue, which deals with the septic system, I just want to try to correct that a little bit. We need the land to be within the town jurisdiction for the septic system, but second of all, it has to be on the same lot. We don't allow in Laytonville either outlots to be used or any other property to be used for the septic system for the primary dwelling on the lot, so it has to be within the same physical configured lot. We basically think that the staff report probably covers the issues which are involved here, and with that I'll turn it over to the mayor if he has any comments and answer any questions that you might have, or Jody might answer anything on behalf of the applicant, but thank you.
Thank you. Thank Mayor Oland.
Thank you. What I was going to say has pretty much been covered.
Great.
The big driver for this on behalf of the town of Laytonville is that we have had a bypass on our land map for many years, for about 15, 20 years. This portion of the bypass was outside of the town. It was in the county. And when we received the draft of the proposed revision of the Olney Master Plan, we saw that Route 108 was to be dualized through our town border. So it woke the people in Laytonville up and said, we need to at least get busy and start working on this. And in the meantime, as had been indicated, Elm Street had submitted a subdivision for some lots that were within the town of Laytonville, and that was declined because of the septic systems that's already been covered. I will emphasize that there will be no new houses in the area to be annexed. All the houses that will be built will be in the existing town, the existing boundary.
Thank you very much. Mr. Clark? Mr. Klein?
I don't think we need anything unless you have some questions.
All right, we'll go straight to questions.
Yeah, I have a couple. Maybe I'll start with Stan, because you alluded to it. It's in the staff report. I guess it was Mr. Klein's letter, though, was saying that you all were going to change the town was going to change the zone. So there would be an agricultural-type zone, but allow for this historic property to be less than 25 acres. But that hasn't happened yet?
The text amendment has been drafted, and it is about ready for introduction at the next meeting, I believe it is.
We've had the hearing, and we held the record open until after comments from you.
Okay, and then maybe I need to ask staff. See, if it's a different zone and the council were to approve it, are our recommendations or the council's recommendations binding on the town if the zone hasn't been changed? Or maybe, got all these legal beagles here, they may know this.
The zone has to be substantially similar to what is in the county's master plan. It would be our view that our agricultural is substantially similar to what is in the county's master plan in terms of the nature, the use, the densities. The amendment which is being proposed to the town's agricultural zone, as Mrs. Krenka many years ago liked to refer to it as frankly a one-eyed Eskimo, which pertains to this property, so that we can accommodate the development of this property, accommodate our Historic Preservation Commission in the town and their desires as to what is going to be done with reference to conditions of approval of a work permit for this property, and also allow the bypass to occur in such a manner that it doesn't gut the town along 108, but does leave it with sufficient distance to act as a buffer. I don't know whether Jody's got anything more than...
If I can, because I don't want to leave you the impression there's some subterfuge here.
Well, yeah, because what I'm trying to understand is if you waited until the zoning text amendment were passed, then you wouldn't even have to think about going to the council, right? We could just decide it, and that would be the end of it. But so I don't understand why you need to wait a couple weeks.
Let me tell you what the text amendment did. I draw your attention to attachment number 2 in the staff report? It's the drawing, the ID plat actually showing the areas to be annexed. And you can see that there's 27.35 acres of land that's intended to be annexed. When we deduct the land area for the proposed bypass road and the area that will be dedicated to the septic fields for the lots that are within the corporate boundaries of the town, we would have ended up with, for the Rolling Ridge lot, a lot less than 25 acres. So what we did is we came up with a text amendment and said, if we annex a piece of property and it's designated historic, then that can have a smaller land area than 25 acres. Because the solution to the problem that we came up with in talking to your staff would have resulted in a lot less than 25 acres, which wouldn't have satisfied their ordinance. So it has this one-shot exception. In terms of the sequencing of everything, the mayor basically has got everything arrayed so that we will do the annexation, the rezoning, and the text amendment all at the same time. It will all occur simultaneously.
And does anything else have to? Does the house have to be redesignated historic?
Actually, that's a good point. That would probably be the fourth item on their agenda. We have the annexation agreement, of which there are drafts, has us volunteering to. I shouldn't say volunteer. We are proposing that a certain area of land would be designated historic, and the mayor and council will do that, and the Historic District Commission has been involved in all those discussions to make sure that it's set up the way they want it to be. So you're right. There would be a fourth item.
Okay, so can you all just sort of, just give me comfort on the record here that this is your intention and the zoning text amendment will move forward and the property will be historic and it'll be slightly less than 25 acres and...
Yeah, most of this is going to be covered in the annexation agreement. The final wording hasn't been resolved yet because there's a couple of things that the Historic Preservation Commission in the town, I think, still wanted to look at. So rather than drafting the agreement, having it adopted, and then having to come back, we want to make sure that everybody got their comments in before the agreement.
Okay, so you can't assure me of the exact specifics, but I'm just asking for assurance of the general outlines of what I just stated.
Sure.
Do you all agree to that? Yes. Okay. Anything?
I have a question, but it's of staff, and I happen to see Gwen Wright in the audience. Do you have any comments about this? I was looking for you to give me the sign. You didn't give me the sign.
my comments are in the staff report and a lot of the conditions that you see on the first page of the staff report are conditions that I suggested. And, again, I guess what I'm hearing is that if the rezoning is from an agricultural zone, if the annexation is an agricultural zone, there's really no opportunity to put conditions on this annexation. That only occurs if they were proposing a different type of zoning. So, again, what we're hearing today is that we don't really have the opportunity to place any conditions on this annexation.
Because
if they go with the agricultural zone, because it's pretty much staying with the approved and adopted functional master plan for agriculture and rural open space.
So
the zones are consistent.
Yes.
So, Gwen, are you concerned about that?
Yes.
Because the result, in other words, right now we have a different zone. And so we prove it the way it is.
I think the zoning isn't my concern.
Yeah.
I think that the zone, that the agricultural zone in the town, I'm sure accomplishes the same density and goals that the agricultural zone in the county does. And that's not the concern. I think the concern is the closeness of the proposed bypass to the historic house. It's about 200 feet behind the historic house. I don't know if the, you know, if there is a reaction to the suggestion I made about planting a mixed deciduous and evergreen buffer now, so that if and when that bypass is ever built, right now it's fairly open land, and the bypass will essentially be lower than, but will be a big cut into the land directly behind this historic house. I think doing some planting now along the alignment of the bypass will help soften that road if and when it's ever built. The other thing that I think is important is also having the current owners donate an easement to the Maryland Historical Trust for the exterior of the property. And, you know, those are my suggestions, but at this point we don't have, as I understand it, the legal authority to put any conditions on.
Okay, that's very, very helpful, especially in light of the education I've been getting over the years about historic properties and historic viewship, et cetera.
I do want to emphasize, this is not just sort of your run-of-the-mill historic property. This is an extraordinary 18th century Tidewater property built by a very prominent early personage. I mean, it's one of the treasures of Montgomery County. It's okay. Truly, truly a special property, and that's why I think as staff, if it was a typical, more ubiquitous farmhouse, I think I would be a little less concerned. But this is up there with, you know, Hayes Manor and some of the other very early properties in the county. This is a really special building.
Okay, and as I understand, we are not in a position to impose conditions on the annexation, but that doesn't preclude legal staff or the legal representatives from proffering what they will or will not do as relates to what's being recommended here. Is that correct? Is that correct?
You're probably talking to me, aren't you?
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything, Mr. Abrams?
The town and its Historic Preservation Commission, if it doesn't have already, will have copies of the recommendations that Gwen has just spoken about. These are items which can be considered, and again, without making any promises that they wouldn't be imposed or not imposed, because we're not in a position to do that, at a historic work permit time and at subdivision, which would occur within the town. Now, whether the buffer is exactly as they want it or whether there's going to be any buffer at all, it's got to be run through the normal process. This is the same as it would be run through your processes. Whether there's going to be an easement imposed is something that we would have to take advice from our Historic Preservation Commission before deciding whether that's going to occur, unless they go forward on our own and say, this is what we want.
Right, may I ask a very specific question then? And that is, if in fact the Historic Preservation Commission for Laytonville were to impose the same condition that's identified here about the significant buffer of deciduous and evergreen trees, the applicant would not have a problem with that? That really is a yes or no answer also. Either yes, we will have a problem with that, or no, we will not.
Yes, but you got to explain. Let me explain why. We have...
Yes, you would have a problem.
No, we would have a problem. We have actually walked the grounds with the town's preservation...
Don't hold it on me. Which one is it?
Hey. Well, I'll let the client answer it. Okay. That's a better way of doing it.
Yeah. I guess I would have a problem, John Clark with Elm Street Development, a problem with that because it's very ambiguous. I mean, this basically says that we should plant all these trees along the proposed alignment of the bypass immediately. Well, that's about a 2,000 or 3,000 foot frontage. And so this is a very open-ended recommended condition.
Well, if it were written, how would you change it if it were written differently to make it less ambiguous and more specific?
I'm not sure if the intent is, well, there's two concerns. One is if the intent is just to buffer the house itself in a very limited manner is one thing. But the other thing is there are, I'm not sure there's enough engineering done to know how much grading is going to be involved. We have promised to give the town grading easements. So it's very conceivable that plantings that get put in now may be taken out at some point in the future. So that would be another concern of making a commitment on something that's when they go to build the road, would be removed. We certainly will work with the town if they have concerns about the location of the bypass and the proximity to the house, if buffering is necessary or warranted in some way to shield the house, I guess, from the bypass location.
Right. What was the intent, Ms. Wright?
It is to shield the house, and it is going to be a challenging goal because, as you can see from the map, that's a photograph, an aerial photograph. The house is there. The bypass is the red line.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is it's pretty open. I mean, and it's called Rolling Ridge because it's, you know, these rolling hills. I mean, the bypass will be very, very visible. And it will be, you know, hard to shield. I guess, again, my position was I think the bypass is going to have a significantly negative impact on the historic character of the house, and all I could think of was planting some trees to try to mitigate that. I don't have a specific location for the trees or you know, an idea of how many trees, but I think that the goal is to shield the house from this new road.
So if this condition were modified to say that the goal is to shield the house from the proposed bypass that's going in, that through the use of deciduous and evergreen trees, although that's not specific, at least the intent is clearer. Is that correct from your perspective?
The intent is clear, and I think you're leaving us to work it out with the town as far as how that's best determined. And we're okay with saying, okay, we will try and figure out something, but does that mean leaving to those trees 200 feet away or are they 600 feet away? It makes a big difference. And the other thing we have to do is we have forest conservation requirements that will come into play on this. We will have to do some planting, and there may be ways to incorporate that into some type of screening. But I'd like to have the flexibility. We understand the intent. We'd like to have the flexibility to work with the town as we go through the process and deal with all the other development issues to figure out what the best solution is.
With that idea, Mr. Chair, if there are no further questions on our part, I'd like to make a motion.
Go right ahead.
Audie, no further questions?
No.
All right. What I would like to propose, Mr. Chair, is that we approve the staff recommendation with a modification to 1D, and that 1D would reflect the intent that was specified by Gwen Wright, and also incorporating the language, or at least the intent of the language, of Mr. Clark, so that when they do work with Laytonville, the jurisdiction of Laytonville, they will have that as somewhat of a guide in order to proceed based upon that.
Are you clear, Maria, on what that means? You just can say yes.
I would say I'll probably call Gwen and Mr. Wright and make sure I've got it correctly. I understand what we're trying to do is say that we'll have some kind of significant buffer to buffer the historic site from the bypass, but we're not going to specify how many feet, but just so long as it does provide buffering.
You know, working in conjunction with Elm Street Development, based upon their engineering, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mr. Chairman, if the motion is correctly pointed out in terms of the staff report, item D is if there were conditions attached to the R3 zoning. If you look back on page 7 of the staff report, I think it's item number 4, which relates to the annexation as it's currently recommended.
Okay. All right, so item condition number 4 will be modified as just described. All in favor of the motion? Commissioner Wellington, I think, seconded it, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, was there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Robinson. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion. Mr. Bryant's motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we are in recess until 2 o'clock.
I'm assuming that they're going to get to the new one.
I think so, yeah.